Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is our ninth lecture titled Trying to Understand Religion in the Contemporary World. During the past eight lectures, we tried to explain the primacy of the Ruh using the verses of the Quran as well as the Ahadith from Usul al-Kafi. The main purpose was to establish the fact that we need to understand that the soul has been given a body, not the opposite of it. It is not that the body has been given the soul. Secondly, we also had to establish the fact that the soul existed before the universe was created, before the physical world was created, and therefore taking the estimate to be 13.8 billion years, we would have to say that the soul was created before that. Obviously not in the time and space paradigm of which we are speaking about concerning the physical world. So we have a soul, the first of creation. All this has been explained. The best of creation, a creation which is a work in progress. This has all been mentioned. I have just clarifying what I have already told. The best of creation, the first of creation, a creation with freedom, because without freedom it cannot be tested, and therefore without freedom it cannot improve. So freedom becoming a critical quality attribute of the intellect, and on that basis it should be rewarded or face retribution. So these were the main ideas which we formulated and used the verses of the Quran, which very, very specifically point out to the reality of the soul. So there is no reason actually for the soul to be there.
So these were the main ideas.
So there should be no reason for the soul to be there if it is not to be examined, because then it wouldn't be a work in progress. It would be good in itself to the fact that you would be able to see God. Obviously not with physical eyes, because it didn't have eyes, but able to see it, Him, in the way of realizing Him. And that would be the end of it. That would be the end of it. It would just be able to realize God and do nothing else. There was nothing to be learned from God, nothing to experience, nothing to choose, and therefore nothing to grow. So obviously the physical world was created for the soul to be tested. The verse of the Quran which was very specific about this, we had already mentioned, but again to bring and highlight the point to progress from there, I would just quote it again. This was verse 190 and 91 of Surah Ali Imran. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Inna fi khalqis samawati wal ardi wa ikhtilafil layli wan nahari la ayatin li ulil albab. الذين يذكرون الله قياما وقعودا وعلى جنوبهم ويتفكرون في خلق السماوات والأرض ربنا ما خلقت هذا باطلا سبحانك فقنا عذاب النار. These were the two verses. The translation goes like this: indeed, in the creation of the heavens and the earth and the alternation of day and night, there are signs for those who possess intellects, those who remember Allah standing, sitting and lying on their sides, and reflect on the creation of the heavens and the earth and say, our Lord, you have not created this in vain. Immaculate are you, save us from the punishment of fire. Obviously, pondering over the creation of the heavens and earth leads to the conclusion that this has been created to test us. So therefore the last part, the fact end of the ayah says, our Lord, you have not created this in vain. Imagine the intellect speaking to God and saying, you have not done anything in vain. What does it mean? It doesn't mean that it is trying to challenge God. It means that I have understood you. It means that I have understood you. Our Lord, you have not created this in vain. That is the heavens and the earth. That is the physical world. Immaculate are you. Subhanaka. You are the pure. You are immaculate. You don't have any blemish in you, weakness in you, any fault in you. Save us from the punishment of fire. So here it is that we see the intellect in its full glory. Finding from just looking at the world, the universe, moving from there towards the creation of this universe. That is, how did this come about and why did this come about? A bit of how did it come about is being learned by us during the last one century. How it came about, we are just learning during the last one century. Before that, the big question was, why did it come around? Why did it come around? You cannot make the how bigger than the why. The why would always be bigger than the how. If you don't accept that, you just need to know anything you use. We don't know how this mobile phone was exactly manufactured. What was the process of its manufacture? But we surely know why it was manufactured. Our car, our home, all these things require why part first. How can we always be kept for the other day? It can always be kept for the other day. So initially when human beings tried to think about creation of the heavens and the earth, and obviously their own physical creation as well, because they are part in the physical form of the universe itself, the heavens and the earth. So when they got this in their minds, it was not how, it was why. The why became important for them. And therefore they started to think and ponder about it. And here comes the reply in this verse number 190 and 191 of Ali Imran. They concluded without any great effort that the world doesn't mean anything unless it has someone or something which can be tested in it. And then finding it to be themselves. Finding it to be themselves, asking God to save them from the hellfire, from hell. So the why is the only basis on which theism or deism and atheism differ. It is nothing more than that. Today's topic was, we wanted to see what are the roots of atheism. The topic was that. What are the roots of atheism? Atheism is the idea which comes to the mind after feeling your own presence and wanting to know how things around you and in you are working. The how question takes precedence over the why question, to the point that the why question becomes meaningless to them, and they consider the how of it, that how did this universe come about, how did we come about, how did everything else come about, forgetting that if we don't question the why, we are going to mess up with this world, because just by knowing how, you will not be able to define your own responsibility. By just knowing how, you will not be able to determine your own responsibility. You will always want to know more and more and more about the how of it than the why of it, and then the imbalance starts. More people disregarding their souls, trying to use their capacity again of the soul, the capacity again of the soul to work with the mind and the body. Trying to use the same soul to answer the how question by using the mind and the body to develop science and technology to a level where these questions will be answered one after another. But in the whole history of mankind, you will find that wherever science grew, it grew as a process of natural history. It never was something totally concerned with facts. It was also concerned with the question of how the facts impact the society. I want all of you to concentrate here. How the facts impact the society. So they were looking at both sides of the coin. The how aspect would give you knowledge. The why aspect would give you law. So you had science and religion working in tandem. One answering the how part and the other answering the why part. And this went on and on and on and on till the point that people started to feel in the 17th century, 18th century, that we are now progressing with science at a speed and converting science into technology at a level where we can properly push this question out of reckoning and promote science per se. And from that point onwards, science became something separated from natural philosophy. Today even we get PhDs in science, in mathematics, in physics, in every other subject, and arts as well. The reason for it was philosophy was a part and parcel of scientific enquiry as well as enquiry about God and activities of human beings as responsible viceroys, vice-regents of God in this world. So when they both coalesced, came together a natural system for managing one with the other was very, very, very clear. There were ethics for science, there were ethics for religion. Science never crossed the ethics which religion wanted it to maintain, and religion saw to it that it didn't discriminate against science per se. Wherever discrimination came to science from religion, it was bad religion. It was selfish religion. It was a group of clergy which wanted to control the world on the basis of ignorance, not on the basis of knowledge. So they held on to their religious ideas, saw to it that others don't come forward and create a world of knowledge. Therefore, knowledge was stopped for the sake of maintaining a status quo. And as we already told earlier, the soul has not been created for a status quo. Status has to change every time in every era because it is the most fluid of creation, the next only to God. So you can just imagine the kind of things it is capable of absorbing and the kind of things it is capable of delivering. So when you put a stop to it, either in the form of science, or when it happened with the Ahl Sunnah, where they stopped religion from enquiry, where they stopped ijtihad. What happened then? Religion started to stagnate. So we have two areas. We find in the Middle Ages, Christianity controlling science, not allowing scientists to work the way proof would lead them to. They didn't want an idea which said that the sun is in the center and the solar system is what we have. It's not the earth that which is what we would call the heliocentric idea. They opposed it. They opposed everything they felt would hurt their control and hegemony over people. So what slowly happened was religion started opposing science on the wrong basis. Within religion, we find enquiry being curtailed, stopped in the Ahlul, apart from the people who are following the Ahlul Bayt, the Ahlul Sunnah, and we find the doors of Ijtihad being closed and inquiry into ideas being proscribed, prohibited, stopped. So we have a very, very different kind of world which we are now facing. Today's world, because the topic is trying to understand and comprehend religion, the contemporary idea of religion. What does religion mean to us in the contemporary period, time? This is what we wanted to move forward with. So the basis of atheism is the how question, and again the why question, when it precedes it, allows the how to become more and more important. So how does religion give strength to science? Through the why question. Because once you know why you have been created, the next question is how? How? So the how question is not sent or cornered in religion and all, swept under the carpet in religion at all. We have this very verse where God is being asked by Abraham. God being asked by Abraham, "Oh God, show me how you raise the dead." This is a question which Abraham asked God, and the verse is there in the Quran. How do you give life to the dead? How do you raise the dead? And God asks Abraham, "Oh Abraham, don't you believe in it?" He says, "I do believe in it, but I want to be comforted so that I feel comfortable how it happens." It's not a question of how for the sake of not accepting it, but for that inquiry which comes to me after the why. I know why you are going to create life. I know why you are going to create death. I know why you are going to create and bring back life again to the dead. I know all that. I know the why of it. Now I would like to know the how of it. So you see a religious mind going after the why to the how of it. And God opens the door for this inquiry, because you, when you now know why you are created, the more I empower you, you will use it for me. You will never use it for exploiting anybody. You will work with the how part of it, with promoting good for everyone, because it's my world and you are my representative, you are my viceroy, you are my vice regent. This is the whole idea of religion and how it wants to create a universe, a world of peace, prosperity, love, and stop hate, tyranny, greed, indecencies, and everything else which emanates from not paying attention to God. All of these emanate from not paying attention to God. How does the Quran start off? It's an amazing miracle in itself. The first surah, which just explains the general purpose of the Quran in 7 verses. That is Surah Fatiha, Suratul Hamd. And then the Surah Baqarah starts. The first is like the preamble. We have a small preamble to our constitution. Every constitution generally has a preamble. It indicates what the constitution wants to do and through what processes it wants to do it. So we have the Surah Hamd as a preamble. 7 verses, a complete idea of what is going to be there in the book. And then we have Suratul Baqarah, the second surah starting. And there we find immediately, Bismillahirrahmanirrahim, Alif Lam Mim, Dalikal Kitabu La Raiba Fi, Hudallil Muttaqeen Allazina Yuminuna Bil Ghaib. What is it? The translation is Alif Lam Mim. This is the book. There is no doubt in it. A guidance to the God-weary, the God-conscious, who believe in the unseen. Who believe in the unseen. How is this belief in the unseen the cause of faith? And again, disbelief in the unseen is the cause of atheism. The same root, the same thing. If you look at atheism, you'll find once they started to learn why things happen. They said, you told that God used to do it. Now we know. For example, rainfall, evaporation, condensation and precipitation, rainfall. We know it. Gravity. We understand the laws of gravity. We know this. So once we know something, that means God is not doing it. And God says, I do everything with a measure, with a process. And I don't do things in an ad hoc manner. All this is there in the Quran and the earlier scriptures. So what has the fact that you have come to know the unseen laws to do with not accepting law, God? It should, on the contrary, be making you accept God more and more. We have already quoted verses where God hints towards a lot of things which we need to know, and that was like a sign of God. You see these mountains, the verse of the Quran which we used in the third or fourth lecture. You see these mountains, they move like clouds, but you can't see their motion. This is what it says. There's so many verses, one after another. The verse about expanding the universe. We are those who expand. The fact that world has been created up to 60 years ago, the universe was considered to be eternal. God says we created it. We spoke about the life coming out of water, which again is established. God says I created life out of water. So where is the problem? All these things were made to be the signs of God. And if you understand it better now, it's part of faith and not of lack of faith or rejecting faith. So where from should faith come? From there is the lack of it or the rejection of it is coming. Yes, because of this difference which we have been able to. We don't want responsibility on us and we want to know things which will empower us, strengthen us and make us dominate others, control others' lives and make our lives in this world better for a while, because everybody knows this body is going to perish. This body is going to perish. There is no doubt about it. It is going to perish. So we are accepting ourselves as a perishable commodity, wanting to know more about the laws of nature to convert it into technology and then use it for exploitation. Just look at what those people who consider their body as the main objective of their life are doing. Are they doing anything else apart from this? Are they doing anything else apart from this? Not a single thing. Not a single thing. When you yourself are perishable, why would you want this world to be there after you? And that too in a good state. Why not use it for yourself in the best way possible for enjoying life and let it be ruined for the next generation or the generation after that? Why should the soil or the earth or the ocean or anything else survive you? When you are going, let everything else go. When you are going to be destroyed naturally, let everything be destroyed by us. All the world's tyranny, all the world's criminality have a root in this activity where you want to not accept responsibility. And the Quran so vividly says, man doesn't want himself to be checked and controlled. That is the state of the nafs where it is not able to comprehend its purpose, and as a result of cultural and hormonal influences, both cultural and hormonal influences, doesn't want itself to be controlled at all. And we know that. All of us have it in us. Our cultural preferences and our hormonal growth. All this leads to our not having any kind of limit and control. Because selfishness at that point becomes the only thing which you know of. Break it. It's like a chicken being born from an egg. That limit in which it was existing, it was a chicken. But once the egg cracked and the chicken came out, it was a very, very, very different life. Similarly, our loving ourselves, self-love, narcissistic nature of human beings, has all been brought in a form of a shell, in the form of an egg, in which the chicken is constrained. We are constrained in that manner. Our soul is pressed and is incapable of moving and delivering. But once you break the shackles, once you break the chains, there it is that you will find that your natural powers are exerted. There it is that you can give love and take love. There it is where you will be happier to give more than what you take. Because you know, taking here more than what you can give is a loss, and giving here more than what you take is a profit. On that basis is the economic life defined. Why don't you give an interest-free loan to God, says the Quran? Is there not anyone who wants to give an interest-free loan to God? مَيَقْرُضُ اللَّهَ قَرْضًا حَسَنًا. That's the verse. All this start giving meaning. Instead of multiplying your wealth by charging more and more interest. And here when you do that, that verse of the Quran comes. That, O Prophet, proclaim war against God, against you, to those who take usury, who take and charge interest and exploit people. The both sides are reflected. On the one, you want everything to flourish because God created everything to flourish through you. That's what your responsibility is. That is why your freedom was there. The amanat which we mentioned again in the maybe the fourth or fifth lectures. The amanat is God's will given to you, the freedom to act on earth and deliver on what terms and conditions God has set for you. And in that, your worship of God takes centrality. Basically, according to the verse we again have mentioned, مَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لَيَعْبُدُونَ. We have not created the jinn and the human beings except that they worship us. So life becomes a continuous process of worship on the field of seeking knowledge of the creation of the world and how things move forward, and on the other side of maintaining the balance in society, where we again use the verse of Surah Hadid, verse 25, لَيَقُومَ النَّاسُ بِالْقِسْطِ. The purpose of sending prophets with the clear proofs and the mizan, the system, so that people can uphold justice. All this comes and it's like a dovetail into a perfect combination of ideas where one part is not heavier than the other part. Your how question is nothing less than your why question. You are too happy to know the why and then progress deeply into the how of things. Quran encourages you on that. There is a verse which says, if you want to cross this boundaries of this earth, you are most welcome to. But you will not be able to do it except with force and power. The word used is sultan. The word sultan means something which is having overpowering qualities. Sallata means somebody who has put his authority on somebody else. So if you want to cross the boundaries of this earth, you will do it, but you will do it only through great power. God wants you to do that. God wants you to do that. Initially, you are the people who are doing it. It was even up to this century. Even up to this century. I am just quoting from some of the topmost scientists of the last century. Topmost. First, we'll start with Einstein. One of his statements: I have never found a better expression than religious for the distrust in the rational nature of reality. Einstein, I'm quoting, I'll give you the reference as well. I have never found a better expression than religious for this trust in the rational nature of reality. What does it mean? It means that if there is rationality in the world, if there is a cause and effect in the world, if certain things lead to another thing and there is a process in which things are arranged, this rationality by itself is a reflection of an order, which I feel that religion is the term which should be used to express it. I have never found a better expression than religious for this trust in the rational nature of reality and its peculiar accessibility to the human mind. How does the human mind get to know something which is rational? And how does it differentiate between the irrational and the rational? He says this quality, the human being, this nature of things in the physical world, all point out to a certain reality. The best word for that would be religious. I would like to term it a religious quality. He moves forward. Where this trust is lacking, science degenerates an uninspired procedure. One should miss the bigger purpose. You are playing around with the lesser purpose. What does it make it? Where this trust is lacking, science degenerates into an uninspired procedure. It becomes a dead science. Let the devil care if the priests make capital out of this. This is the qualification which he does. He says, why do I care? Let the devil care. Let the devil care if the priests make capital out of this. The word religious, the priests make capital out of it. They make money out of it. He says, I don't care. Let the devil care. If devil has made them do this, let them enjoy the monies which they earn from misusing religion, and that is for the devil to take care of. But for me, it doesn't make sense unless we have that quality of religion in this. There is no remedy for that. That the priest would be corrupt, there is no remedy. Those who start selling religion become corrupt. Because religion is related to the soul cannot be sold. And anything relating to the soul cannot be sold. And that is very clearly told in the Surah Yasin, where God says, you follow those who have been guided and don't ask you anything for what they give you. Conversion of knowledge of the soul into a product to be marketed to the world makes the act of religion into an act of loot, into an act which degenerates human beings instead of regenerating them. So wherever religion is having a contact with money and the person giving it, no prophet charged for whatever he did. No imam charged for whatever he did. Today's clergy is totally dependent on money making, and you have examples of money making which I can't even mention here. And people are attracted to them because they give you religion which attracts you, make you forgetful of the soul and tell you that if you can mess up with the soul, God wants you to do that. Because God likes those souls who mess up instead of those souls who want to remain pure. The verses of the Quran says the opposite of it. Our sins are made ordinary, normal to us, and therefore the degeneration comes in. So here this mention from Einstein is on this part, that what bad religion is doing is because of the bad people who are using it. If somebody uses a knife for a wrong purpose, it's not the knife which you should say is bad. It's the person using the knife. It was something used for cutting vegetable or something else. The fact that it has been used for something wrong, he moves forward. Whoever has undergone the intense experience of successful advances in this domain, that is science. Quoting Einstein again. Whoever has undergone the intense experience of successful advances in the domain, in this domain, that is science, is moved by the profound reverence for the rationality made manifest in existence, the grandeur of reason incarnate in existence. Much more is there which he speaks of. My religiosity consists of a humble admiration of the infinitely superior spirit who reveals himself in the slight details we are able to perceive with our frail and feeble minds. That deeply emotional conviction of the presence of a superior reasoning power which is revealed in the incomprehensible universe forms my idea of God with a capital G. This is Einstein. I'll quote more and more. Schrodinger, Erwin Schrodinger, obviously who has developed wave mechanics. He says, the scientific picture of the world around me is very deficient. The scientific picture of the world around me is very deficient. It gives me a lot of factual information, puts all our experience in a magnificently consistent order, but is ghastly silent about all that is really near to our heart. That really matters to us. This is what I am saying of the how and the why question. I am repeating this. He has not used the words I used, because basically these people are not philosophers. They are top level scientists. Those who are born once in a lifetime. Very few of them have reached the levels which these guys have reached. The scientific picture of the world around me is very deficient. It gives me a lot of factual information, puts all our experiences in a magnificently consistent order, but is ghastly silent about all that is really near to our heart, that really matters to us. It cannot tell a word about the sensation of red and blue, bitter and sweet, feelings of delight and sorrow. It knows nothing of beauty and ugly, good or bad, God and eternity. Science sometimes pretends to answer questions in these domains, but the answers are very often so silly that we are not inclined to take them seriously. This is Schrodinger. There are words from Max Planck, who first introduced quantum hypothesis. Then we have Paul Dirac, who was basically, along with Heisenberg and Schrodinger, capable of actually writing the formulae of quantum theory. Nobel Prize winners, all of them. He writes, God is a mathematician of a very high order, and he used advanced mathematics in constructing the universe. That 15 to 20 pages from which I can quote from here. These people who actually brought science of today to where it is. They are the people who brought science of today to where it is. Had it not been for their efforts, we wouldn't have not known science. They are the ones who are in awe of what they are seeing on the physical side. The big problem with them is they were born into Christianity or Judaism, both being religions of great insight, but the advances which happened to religion itself by the coming of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, they don't carry it. The reason that a large number of very powerful thinkers are converting to Islam during our times. People who have really worked hard in the domain of religions, scholars in their own right, have gone deeply into the holy books of the Jews and the Christians. They come back to the Quran and say, what is this? This is a reality which is beyond reality. This is reality beyond reality. It leads you in the whole activity of the human soul and moves the physical to a higher level through the metaphysical. And for doing that, it uses the simplest of terms. I'll just quote from Surah Ar-Rahman, the first four verses. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ar-Rahman allama al-Qur'an, khalaqa al-insan, allamahul bayan. Very, very simple. The All-Beneficent has taught the Qur'an. He created mankind and taught him articulate speech. What is this? The All-Beneficent, the Rahman, what does he do? He says, allama al-Qur'an. Why does the allama al-Qur'an come before khalaqa al-insan? Obviously, allama al-Qur'an should have come after the creation of mankind. But what comes after creation of mankind? Allamahul bayan. We taught him articulate speech. We gave him language. Which we have spoken about is we are the only animals. Not even the Neanderthals had a hardwired linguistic capability. We are the only ones. Funny. Strange. Strange. But that's what it is. Our civilization is totally dependent on our ability to speak and then convert the speech into symbols and make it into writing so that we can reconvert it back into speech. That's what writing is all about. And that has, God mentions it like anything. From the beginning words which came to the Prophet, Iqra, Bismi Rabbika Allazi Khalaq, Khalaq Al-Insana Min Alaq, Iqra Wa Rabbuka Al-Akram, Allazi Allama Bil Khalam. He who teaches through the pen. Civilization would have been not there had knowledge not been penned, had knowledge not been brought down and written. So he says process of growth of the civilization is through my process of giving knowledge through the pen. Allama bil qalam. Bay is used in Arabic for pointing out to word something which is being used. Allama, he has taught them through the qalam, the pen. So now we have it here. Surah Rahman, Allam al-Quran. So what is the Quran? And how is it before the insan, the khalq of insan? We told earlier, in the earlier lectures, basically our souls have been there as the first of intellect from the very beginning. We have also pointed out that it's a wave, the intellect made into the spirit, which was blown into the body of Adam, which became the soul. Three things having the same process: intellect, spirit, soul. Aql, ruh, nafs. Nafs is in a state of facing a big problem, basically, because it has to act through the physical. And physical is the only source of knowledge for the human being when it starts its journey after coming into this world from the womb of the mother. It's having no knowledge. Akhrajakum min butuni ummahatikum la ta'lamuna shay. We have come, taken you out from the womb of your mother in a state that you knew nothing. And once he starts seeing things around him, and we gave you the ability to see, hear and think, and from this process things start moving forward. So what is the reality of the nafs? It's the spirit before that, and it's the aql even before that. That's the intellect. So we were part and parcel of the whole process of creation. I've already mentioned this, I'm just highlighting it. We were part and parcel of the whole process of creation. The aql was there and the creation started later on. The aql was in its own ability capable of seeing all that happening before it. Till the last point of its being sent into the body, it is capable of recognizing God. This verse This is the very famous verse which you have again quoted. Alasto bi rabbikum qalu bala. Verse number 172 of Surah Araf, the seventh surah. Yeah, here it is. وَإِذْ أَخَذَ رَبُّكَ مِنْ بَنِي آدَمَ مِنْ ظُهُورِهِمْ ذُرِّيَّتَهُمْ وَأَشْهَدَهُمْ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ أَلَسْتُ بِرَبِّكُمْ قَالُوا بَلَىٰ شَهِدْنَا أَن تَقُولُوا يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ إِنَّا كُنَّا أَنْ هَذَا غَافِلِينَ أَوْ تَقُولُوا إِنَّمَا أَشْرَكَ آبَاؤُنَا مِنْ قَبْلُ وَكُنَّا ذُرِّيَّةً مِنْ بَعْدِهِمْ أَفَتُهْلِكُنَا بِمَا فَعَلَ الْمُبْطِلُونَ. The translation: when your Lord took from the children of Adam from their loins their descendants and made them bear witness over themselves, he said to them, am I not your Lord? They said, yes indeed, we bear witness. Till the point of being given the ruh and the body and the ruh coming together, the spirit. The question is being asked, till the last, it's not at the first level. The first level of the intellect, the akal recognized God, no problem at all. But just before entering the body, it is again being asked, am I not your Lord? It says, surely, surely, we witness it. You are our Lord. Why does it say that? So that later you should not say. What should you should not say? We were not aware of all this. Lest you may say, they said, yes, indeed, we bear witness. Lest you should say on the day of resurrection, indeed, we were unaware of this. Or lest you should say, our fathers ascribed partners to Allah before us and we were descendants after them. Will you then destroy us or punish us because of what the falsifiers have done? That means we didn't do idol worship. It was something which was being done in our lifetimes. Our ancestors were doing it. We just followed. So we were not the people who did the original sin. So why are you destroying us along with those who actually did shirk? From the beginning, akhl is there till the point in the form of spirit. It's touching us. And then it comes in. Here it is that the greatest problem comes. Now it's your journey to move things forward from here. Your responsibility is starting from here. How you use your mind and your body to get more information through the process of using your own nafs, the ruh which has been given to you, in a manner that it leads to a different understanding of the world compared to those who are not using this process of the ruh, but are depending on their body and mind alone without recognizing the ruh and the nafs as a separate creation capable of ideas which go beyond the basic learnings of the world. That is, you start correlating what you see here with your intuition which you got from the earlier life which you had of the soul from the day of the creation of Akhl. What happens is, when you start praying and then concentrating on this world, your prayer raises you towards that original quality of yours. That means your ruh becomes closer, your nafs become closer to the original state. That is the state of the Akhl, where there was no problem at all. That means you get released from your body, control of your body. Once the control of your body on your hormones and your social pressures are diminished, your ability to think out of the box becomes more and more palpable and obvious. And once you start concentrating on matter and thinking about it, you start getting intuitions from the earlier period of your creation, and from that only do discoveries come forward, inventions come forward. Otherwise it's not possible. Nothing comes without a cause. Nothing. If we are capable of higher levels of intuition, that is basically because we were created through a process which allows for intuition. Had we not been created through a process which allows for intuition, we wouldn't have got it. You would get things, you would look at the rationality of it, but that spark which I spoke of in the last lecture wouldn't come at all. it would be like a more complicated kind of reciting a table. Children in class 4, class 5, class 6, they start reciting tables, right? Any level of science would be like reciting tables. It won't give you more than what the reciting of tables in class 4 and 5 and 6 gave you. No, it won't give you anything more. The whole idea of new science, new mathematics, new subject, everything, new way of writing history also, new way of doing sociology also. I'm not going into arts, it gets more complicated. Everything has a new way to do it. Everything. But who's going to get it? Those who understand their soul, are not under the control of their hormones, have understood them, know what harm they can do, take caution, and move in their lives in a matter which is capable of understanding the higher reality. And through that higher reality, understanding the lesser things. You are higher. When you look at this world as a lesser thing, you will understand it. When the world overwhelms you, you will never understand it. You will be more interested in watching films, in watching beauty pageants. You will be too happy in enjoying great food. You would be too happy people praising you. All has to be changed. You should be happiest when you are praising God. You should be happiest when you feed the hungry. Otherwise you won't do it. If you want to be happy on this side as well as that side, it doesn't work. You have to choose your happiest moments. If your happiest moments are physical moments, gone is the religion. At best, you could become a priest to sell it. At best. And at worst, a follower. At best, a priest who would sell religion, and worst, the follower. I think you don't want to be both. Or we don't want to be both. We want to be something different. And the difference is where we have here our heart. Where the hadith says, how can I differentiate between wrong and wrong? The Prophet touches his heart and says, hey, from here. It's all in you. Why you are doing this, you know. Why you are not doing this, you know. You know, have it. You can just try to forget it, but you won't. Innal insana ala nafsahi basira, says the Quran. Man is very, very conscious of what his nafs is doing. What his soul is doing. He's very conscious of it. Good or bad, he has it. And up to a point where God, after giving him a lot of options, makes him incapable of going back again to him. Again, as the verse of Quran says, do not be like those who have forgotten God. And God made them forget themselves. And God made them forget themselves. That is the biggest problem we are going to have. You think I'll do everything, then I'll have a choice of being what I am. God says, I will not allow you the choice of being what you are. I will not allow you and give you a choice of being what you are. You have a choice to be my servant or not my servants. What you will become, when you become my servants, the height of it you will be not knowing. You will be not knowing. What I can give you, when you become my servants, you will not know the epitome of it. The final destination you don't know. You will not know. If you don't be my servants, the final state of degeneration, degradation, again, is something you will not be able to know. Only when you will be getting there, you will be knowing it. Even in the world, and then in the next world. Here again, whatever you get from God, by worshiping Him, you will know only after reaching there, and when what He rewards you later would be what He would be giving you. Rizwanullahi Akbar, says the Quran. After everything, you will not be able to understand it. So what do you want to take from God? Something of goodness, of greatness, of His pleasure, or the other way around? The verse of the Quran, I'll just conclude by just reading the final verse from the Quran. Suratul Jasiya, 45th surah, ayat 23. أَفَرَأَيْتَ مَنِ اتَّخَذَ إِلَٰهُ هَوَى وَأَظَلَّهُ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ عِلْمٍ. Very important words. Have you seen him who has taken his desire to be his God? Low desire. And whom Allah has led astray scientifically. Rules are mine. All the laws of the universe are his. If you don't take those laws and use it for him and start benefiting independently of him for things, the next stage that will come to you is he will misguide you scientifically. The same laws which could take you to the highest heaven, Alaileen, would be used by God to bring you to the Asfala Safileen. Imma Shakiran says the Quran, or Imma Kafura. Either be grateful or be ungrateful. And what does he do as a result of that? All is happening in a knowing scientific manner. And set a seal upon his hearing and his heart, and drawn a blind on his sight. This is what will happen. So who will guide him apart from after Allah? Only one source of guidance. Inna alayna lal huda, says the Quran. It's on us to guide the mu'mineen, to give the hidayat. And if God is not giving hidayat, who will give you hidayat? And how the hidayat of God will come? Through your recognizing your soul as an immortal reality which will never perish. So many verses in the Quran. Hum fiha khalidun, hum fiha khalidun. Either in hell or in heaven. Either in heaven or in hell. Destruction of the human soul is not there at all. That is the biggest principle of religion, of every religion. Your soul is yours and it will remain. It won't die. So will you work for something which is going to perish, that is the body, or use the body to raise something which will not perish? What do we do in life? Anything which is going to remain for a longer period of time is protected more. And something which is not going to have much of utility will not be protected that, in that manner. We do the opposite of it. What a difficult thing to do against yourself. It is a difficult thing to do something against your own common sense. Common sense. You have a common sense, right? What remains for a longer period should be taken care of more. But what perishes should be taken less care of. I am correct? The body is going to perish. It is being taken care of more. Its pleasures are being sought after greater, in a greater manner. Soul is being neglected without knowing the kind of growth it can have in this world and continually after. The growth of the soul will not stop after Qiyamah. That is the point from where its real growth will happen, because it has already gone through the testing. It will be raised to the level of what it originally was, with the whole experience of the world which had come to it when it was here. There it was in the pure form. Here it went, came out unscathed, without being defiled. Out it came. And now the question of reward will start. This is all testing. There is no reward at all in this world. Anything which is perishable cannot be a reward from God. Anything perishable cannot be a reward from God. So when we see in the verses of the Quran, wealth being considered an enemy, children and even wives being considered at times enemies, it's not that God has created man and woman to be enemies, no. On the contrary, the Quran says, he has created great love and affection and mercy amongst you. That's what God says. But why does it say here, when it comes to the soul part of it? If your family, if your wealth are acting in an opposite direction, they become a tribulation and a curse. They become a tribulation and a curse. And if they are acting in the proper manner, they become a mercy. Anything with the name of God is mercy. Anything without the name of God is, even the Quran, if the name of God is not properly understood. Name is not just a name. Name is the attribute, the quality. And the quality goes back to the being of God. And that actually creates a world which is so superior that if we try to understand it, it will become something so great that we will not stop thanking God in this world. That, oh God, you have given to my soul this world. Given to my soul this world. And will never consider it apart from the soul aspect. Never. Because the greatness of this world to us is through what we look at it from the point of view of the soul. Otherwise, if you look at it from the point of view of your body, it is the worst thing that can be there for you. It will take you away, move you away, attract you, and leave you without any possible chance of growth. That is, it will confirm your degeneration. The world becomes the greatest thing to you, or soul, if you look at it from the angle of the soul. And the worst thing possible, if you move that soul away. Total degeneration and destruction. Because a lot of us are in that condition, we feel it's a common condition. But God says in the Quran, Khalilum min ibadahi la shakur. Very few among my servants are those who are really grateful. We are not grateful. Because the bar is set so low, we feel that it's acceptable to us to be whatever we are. We are not. Therefore, we are not becoming examples to others. Nobody takes us to be an example. And if we are not an example, like the Prophet was to us, that means that we are wasting our time in this world, despite the fact that we accept ourselves to be the Ummah of the Prophet, the last Prophet sent to mankind, with the book which has no comparison with any other book, and with the Ahl-e Bayt, again, who have no comparison with any other progeny of any other Prophet. They have given us everything what we require to know the why as well as the how of things. Let us concentrate both on the why and the how, and let us all work together in a brotherly manner to create a world which is befitting the idea of the Quran and the Ahl-e Bayt. May God help us to follow the path of the Quran and the path of the Ahl-e Bayt. Wa akhiruna da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you very much, Mujahid. Again, very, very good advice, very, very good points, very, very good food for thought, for actions. I think we have, in these lectures, covered broadly the whole concept of Tawheed and the role of belief and unbelief, and how science has corroborated what the Quran has said. And our responsibility going forwards, and our realization of the soul, and so on. So many questions also arise from it. I think I sent you some.
Yeah, I have it here.
Perhaps
you can deal
with those initially, and then if people have some further questions, we can go forward.
I will move fast on this. Something of it I have explained already, but I'll just move fast. The first question, how do we reconcile the following two statements? It took 13.8 billion years for the body to be ready for the soul, but as per the Quran, Adam alayhi salam was made of clay, and then God breathed into him of his spirit, and he stood up as a man. The metaphysical part took place before the physical part. This is the answer I am giving you. The physical part came much later, but in one sense, actually time started with that 13.8 billion year period. Before that, there was no time. there is no time for the metaphysical in the sense we understand time in the sense of the physical. If there was any time of that kind, it was something superior to the kind of time which we have now. This is discussed a lot in philosophy, but as of now, we will have to say the physical world is 13.8 billion years old and it took all that time, what we discussed in the last lesson, that the nature takes the shortest route, and therefore if it could happen that the human beings could be there within the first billion years, it would have been there. God doesn't take a long route where the short route is possible. And that has been accepted by all science. If science says that there are two steps are required for a certain thing, God will not take three steps. Additional steps for the sake of nothing will never be there. So this 13.8 billion years is the greatness of the soul, that it took 13.8 billion years. As I told earlier also, we have in our human body maybe 0.002 mg of gold, and heavy elements have been formed in the core of stars. So what gold we have now within us or on this earth has been formed in the core of stars. So we have something like in us the heavy elements which are all parts of the core of the stars, either through meteorites which have come here or when we broke away from the sun. And again I have quoted verses, have not the kafirin seen, the unbelievers, that the heavens and the earth were one and we then separated them. All these verses were there. So the question of why the ruh was given to the body after 13.8 years, there is no contradiction there. The body had to be created after the process of 13.8 billion years, and once it became capable of taking the soul was given to it. So it speaks a lot about the soul, and when you look at this 13.8 billion years, you will say that kind of a soul required that kind of a... For example, if there is somebody who wants to look great and wants to get something stitched for himself, right? So he might ask it to be very elaborate, and it might take a year for it to be woven and another a few months for it to be stitched, right? Because he wants that kind of elegance and that kind of quality in it. So you say, no, it cannot be done in a day or two or a week or a month. It will require at least a year or more than a year. So that is the quality of that dress which a king maybe wants. Here the creator is giving a body which is like a cloth. We do have a very wonderful example in the Quran also. He says that we have given you clothing which covers you and which is an ornament for you, and it protects you from the harshness of the weather. But the dress of piety, of God-weariness, is the greatest and the best dress. Libas of taqwa, zalika khair. The libas of taqwa, the garment of taqwa, is the greatest and the best garment. So when we have this, we should understand that 13.8 billion years only emphasizes the greatness of the soul. It only emphasizes that. It emphasizes nothing else. So we should be happy that God has given us this world as a place to live. And our body, the soul, with such elaborate preparation, totally godlike and totally unlike what we would have done, or dead, meaningless nature which is being attributed by the atheist would have been able to do. So you start taking a distance from the atheist. The further you go away from them, the greater your status before God. The more you understand of Him, the better you understand of yourself. So that 13.8 billion years of our bodily creation process is actually something which helps us understand the importance of our soul better than the importance of the body, because it has been given for the soul and not vice versa. So I think this question doesn't require any great kind of reconciliation, basically because it is a process of one thing and then adding of the other, which is the higher, that is the intellect, through this process of the spirit and then it becoming the soul to it. So maybe if it had been more than 13.8 billion years, it could be 30 billion years. Again, that would have only added to the importance of the soul. So there is no dichotomy of any kind which we will be seeing here. Second question, previous understanding was that prophets and imams were endowed with ilme ladunni before they were sent down to earth. But according to the last talk, everyone started life on earth knowing nothing at birth. I told you that the soul which has been given to us is of a single quality and it has been witness to the whole process of creation. So there is a kind of one level or other of ilme ladunni with all of us. The imams are born like us, the prophet is born like us. What is good about them is they start early and start at a very high speed and come to the point where they have come, and that is their greatness. That is their greatness, and that is why they are hujjat upon us. If they started from, for example, we started zero, they started 100, and from 100, zero means infinity. Even one would be infinity for a zero. The difference between a zero and one would be infinite. Right? Very simple. Alamdar is looking a bit. Point 0000000000001 will add. Add another million zeros. If you are not satisfied to that point, add another million zeros. Still one, you will not come to a figure ever to reach, because you will be just adding the zeros after that one. Right? So that's what I am calling infinity. Right? Whenever you want to bring it out, I'll add another million zeros. You get that? So, the question is, if that be the case, they will never be hujjat on us. They are infinitely superior, they will act infinitely superior ways. We will act infinitely inferior, we will act infinitely inferior ways. Finished. Gone. Therefore, the Quran says about the Prophet, you did not know anything about the book or Iman. That's what the Quran says. The Prophet, you didn't know anything about the book or about Iman. What does that mean? Whatever you have reached through the process of taking the right route towards us. And laisa lil insani illa ma sa'a. I have told this verse in the last lecture as well in the question and answer series. Nothing, surely nothing belongs to man for which he has not labored, put an effort. So towards God, our movement is through our efforts. That is the greatness of the soul. That is the greatness of the soul. After looking around itself, it starts running towards God. That is the greatness. Not running towards matter. That should be what basically animals should do, not human beings. Human beings are the viceroys of God, the vice-regents of God. So the question here is very, very simple, that ilme ladunni is there in all of us. We come to this world. Yeah. The question of IQ differs. I have already told that. And that would be a marginal thing. And somebody below a particular level of IQ will not be questioned. Somebody who doesn't have akhl will not have any questions to be given to him or to be answered by him. There is a saying in the Shariat which says, Man la akhla lahu, la deena lahu. He who doesn't have akhl doesn't have religion. Because religion is all predicated on the idea of akhl. Because that is what really moves things and takes you towards God, as the first hadith of Usul-e-Kafi, which we have discussed in detail in the 6th, 7th and 8th chapters. If the Ruh is part of Allah, Amre Rabbi, so when we say Khurbatan ilallah, then we are saying Khurbat of the Nafs, not the Ruh. As I told you, the Ruh is the spirit, the Ruh is the Nafs. When it is basically sent and comes to contact with the body. So what we are saying Nafs is the soul. What we are saying Ruh is the spirit. And what we are saying Akhl is the intellect. All belonging to the same thing. When God says Nafaktu fihi min ruhi, it means that He is giving something of His spirit. It doesn't mean that God is extracted something from Himself and given it to us. No, it doesn't work like that. If God says Baiti for Kaaba, it doesn't mean that He has a place to live. It is the closeness of something which is indicated. So when He says Ruh, it is a Amr. It's an order. Again, this is there in the Quran. Yas'alunaka anir ruh. O Prophet, they ask you about the Ruh, the Spirit, tell it's the order of God. It's the command of God. So our Ruh is the command of God, but God says it's my Ruh basically because the closeness it has being the first creation, the best creation. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said that. The question is, what we would say, with the body, the state is our nafs, right? Which is the result of the spirit which has come into us. So, khurbatan ilallah is what you feel of as khurbat, and that would be the nafs. And the verse of the Quran, ya ayyatuhan nafsul mutmainna turja ila rabbi ki raziyatan mardiya, is pointing towards that. O nafs, which is in the state of equanimity, state of itminan, come back towards us in a state that you are satisfied and approved. That's the verse of the Quran. So it speaks to the nafs at the state of the nafse mutmainna, satisfied, composed, a nafs which has known what it was really designed for and has achieved that result for which it was designed. So the question is, nafs is the thing which we realize. We don't realize the soul in its glory apart from the body in which we are now. We will not be able to understand it till the point that this body is gone and the nafs tastes death. Kullu nafsin zaiqatul maut. At the point of death of the body, the nafs gets separated from the body and moves away to the state of barzakh. According to the Quran, which says wawarahum barzakh. The barzakh is after that. Purgatory would be the word in English. So I think we have got this also, that khurbatan illallah means the khurbat of the nafs, but again to differentiate between the spirit and the nafs is only for the sake that the spirit was given to us to the body, and once it came into the body and starts working with the body, it becomes the nafs. And is addressed by God as a nafs. Nafse ambara, nafse lambama, nafse mutmainna. After leading civilization for a period of 100,000 years, why did Muslim Ummah stagnate in pursuit of knowledge? What happened with the Muslim Ummah was very, very obvious. Plenty is the cause of neglecting God. When you have more than you can digest and want to consider it the best thing that you have, obviously you will become oblivious of God. That is what happened to the Muslims. When they got this world and the riches of this world and everything which they felt was good for them from the point of view of this world, they started neglecting the knowledge on the basis of which they had come to that level. And this happens with every society in the world. They acquire knowledge through a process of hard work. You can look at United States of America. Just see the last 150 years of history of United States. Look at their educational institutions which were established during this 150 years period. What kind of people were there who were actually doing it? What was Europe and what was the United States at that time? They say the people who came and settled down in the United States were those who, looking at the life of Europe, which had become totally materialistic, sought the United States to come here and have a religious way of life. You can see this in the history of the United States from the time they settled down in North Carolina, the first settlement, and then from there onwards. They worked on this basis. It was a conservative society. The kind of knowledge which came to the people there during the last part of the 19th century, that is 1850 onwards, to the point of 1950, 100 years, was basically as a result of the setting up of institutes. Harvard, set up by a priest, died young, maybe in his 30, I think he was 31, 37, right? You can Google and see. Other universities set up by families who were committed to knowledge, all conservative people. People who believed in knowledge and believed in knowledge as the sole source of saving your souls. The sole source of saving your souls. And therefore they went after it. They gave their wealth to promote it. And this continued and continued. And when we had Hitler doing what he was doing with the Jews, we see a mass exodus of qualified people, both Jews as well as Christians, from Europe to the United States. This happened roughly around the 30s, 1930s. We have people of the kind of Einstein, we have people like Gödel, we have other people who came from England, Paul Dirac. All these people moved out to the United States. Princeton was the first place they came to, Institute of Advanced Studies, and there was support for them to do more research, and slowly United States became the center of all knowledge. This happened till the 50s. Once the Second World War was over, United States moved into a different league altogether, with the Europe had been destroyed, and they were in a position of helping them, and the Marshall Plan started, and United States started to grow and use these sciences which it had acquired and convert into technology and grow and move ahead of Europe, which had degenerated both as a result of its pleasure seeking attitude and as a result of wars which led to its destruction. So England was destroyed in a certain way, France was also in the same way, Germany came later, Italy was in the same condition, and Europe by and large had to face all the problems of the two world wars. So United States was in a much better position. It moved ahead. But where did it move ahead? Moved ahead towards more of what it was not than towards what it was. So today we find it in a state where instead of being the best place, it is turning out to be the worst place from the point of view of worshipping God. It's coming out to be the worst place from the point of view of worshipping God. Unless some great effort is made by people living there from among the Mumini, it will be very difficult for the younger generation to understand what we are speaking about the soul today. The primacy of the soul, that the soul has been given the body, not vice versa. Because there are preachers in your country there in the United States who are selling pop religion in the name of the religion of the Ahle Bayt. It is basically pop star religion, and your children are lapping it up, for it allows them to taste of the forbidden fruit. The fruit has been forbidden to Adam, it has been forbidden to the children of Adam. It is an indication that you will be tempted by the fruit, and you will go when Satan tells you that it is the best thing to happen. So that fruit which Adam tasted, we keep tasting it. Till the last day we will be doing that. And some places are becoming more capable of offering that fruit as kosher, as something which is halal. Great it is. Is it not? That the same fruit which Adam was prohibited from, that tree, going near it even, we are taking it, partaking it as something halal and kosher. The world will never satisfy the soul. The only thing which can satisfy the soul is Allah, the Creator. If the soul is going towards God and at a great speed, greater than the speed of light, then be sure that it is in the right state of mind. And if it is not doing it, we need to rectify ourselves, help, take help from others, see to it that our ability to move towards God is more than the speed of light. The only thing which moves faster than the speed of light would be the human soul, I suppose, or something close to it. So the 1,000-year part is over. We started neglecting, and God says, in Uttum Udna, this is the fourth question which I am just, 1,000 years of leadership, why? God says, in Uttum Udna, if you turn back, we will turn back in the Quran. We turned back from God and God turned back from us, and see what we are now today. People are laughing at us and we don't know how to stop them from laughing, except from maybe some fools who would like to go and bomb them, which again serves the purpose and proves the point. What would be the catalyst to jolt us into actually seeking higher knowledge and reattaining a position of thought leadership that we have totally lost? So few Nobel laureates compared to our Jewish brethren. The problem of getting Nobel Prize or not getting a Nobel Prize is secondary. What is important is we should really work on why we were created. The Jews have an advantage. Actually, you see, they didn't have power till 1948. But the kind of work the Jews were able to do in the 18th century in Europe, they were not even allowed, and even in the 19th century, they were not allowed to go to universities. Jews were not allowed to enter universities. They developed their own teaching mechanisms. There was a school in Paris, which was known as the Jewish school, which was basically advancing in the field of mathematics. If you go into mathematics and find more about the Jewish advances in the field of mathematics during the 1850s, you'll get it. So what actually happens is, we don't need power. We don't need to have a lot of wealth. When the Jews were poor, when the Jews were not in power, so being away from power helped them. The Christians were in power and the Muslims were in power. So the Muslims did what they did. They enjoyed life. They had big harems and they were happy about it. Then the Christians are in that process now. And the Jews have joined them too, now because they have also got power and they are controlling the world. So now it's the Jews and Christians' time to enjoy life to the detriment of everybody else. The Hindus of India, to a certain extent, have joined them, but a very minuscule minority of a few million compared to 1.35 billion who are sitting here and looking at those who have gone to the other side of the world as the angels of India. Maybe they are angels or satans, we will know about it later on. But from here, a lot of us feel that they are the angels. We need to understand that the process of going towards God is a process of the soul, and the soul is only active when it considers God to be the greatest thing that can be possibly conceived of. And it being the closest thing to God is endowed with the ability to work at the level God wants it to work. Anything less than that would be some form of shirk. What is stopping you from being the greatest thing God wants you to be? That is, be 100% capable of your potential. What is stopping you? What is? And what was that didn't stop the Imams or the Prophets? What was that didn't stop the Prophets and the Imams from achieving that 100%? What was it? The absence of anything between the soul and God. That was it. The absence of anything between the soul and God. There is worship of this kind. Rabbi, Habli, Kamal al Inqita'i ilayk, wa anir absara qalbi bi noor qudsik. O Lord, give me, bestow upon me, Kamal al Inqita'i ilayk, a kind of getting away from everything towards you. Getting away from everything. Kamal al Inqita'i, the height of Inqita'i. Being cut away from everything and coming towards you. At that level is knowledge born of a higher kind. At that level does ilm ladunni really blossom. Wahab li kamal al-inqita'i wa anir absara qalbi bi noor qudsik, and give light to the eyes of my heart. We don't have more than these two eyes which we are looking the world with the greed. It doesn't allow the eye of the heart to even open. Our hearts of the eyes are closed. Their eyes of the hearts were open. So with their eyes of the body, they could see what God wanted them to see and not see what God didn't want them to see. So they could see things which were not visible to us, basically because their heart started seeing through God. The Quran says, Yanzuru bin Nurillah. They look from the light of God. So how does the light of God come to one person? When you are totally in contact with God. If we put our hearts and soul together, He will oblige us. He will give us. That is the reason He says, Ud'uni astajib lakum. Call me. Whoever will tell you, call me. Even your parents will not tell you. Call us, we'll help you. You keep calling them regularly, they might be get irritated also. Why are you calling us unnecessarily? Every day you give us a call. I want this, I don't want that, I want this, I don't want that. They'll get fed up. If you are old like me, keep calling the children, they'll get fed up. God says, call me. Inni gharib ujibu da'wat ad-da'i zadani. I am very, very close to you. I am closer to you than your jugular vein. Why is all this? That is the love of God coming through the verses. And once you start feeling it yourself through the soul, you have got it. And once the soul starts blossoming in a society, not an individual. If the soul blossoms in an individual and the society doesn't support it, what happens is Karbala. What happens is the death of Imam Musa Kazem in the prison. What happens is the poisoning of Imam Raza. What happens is the ghaibat of the 12th Imam. That's all. If the society cannot take the burden of the blossomed souls of the Imams, they will be targeted and killed. That's what's going to happen. The good will go and get what they want to from God. And those who don't support the cause of the good will lose their lives anyway, and they have nothing to gain after death. So we are in a very precarious, problematic situation. If we understand it, seek through prayer and worship. Ittaqullah wa yuallimukullah. You have your taqwa, I'll give you of my knowledge. There is some knowledge which just comes through taqwa. There's no other process of it. That will come. And once that comes, automatically the verse of the Quran comes, Antumul alauna in kuntum sadiq, in kuntum mu'mineen. You will have a upper hand if you are mu'mineen. Upper hand means upper hand through knowledge. Upper hand through behavior. Upper hand through ethics. And as the hadith of the Prophet says, بُعِثْتُ لِأُتِمَّ مَكَارِمَ الْأَخْلَاقِ. I have been sent as a prophet to you all so that I can raise the standards of ethical conduct to its very highest level. That's what the prophet has come. It all comes through the soul. It all comes through the soul. Let our souls become more and more strong through the worship and the good deeds which we'll be able to do. But do it together. Do it as a group. Nothing is greater than this. As God says, يَدُلَّهِ مَعَ الْجَمَاعِ. It is in the hadith, and God's hand is with the jamaat, with the group. So if all those who are moving towards God come together, changes will come in a manner which we, alhamdulillah, are seeing in today's world also. It's not something which I am taking you to the time of the Prophet. Wherever some souls came together with the good intent, God has helped. And where they didn't come together, the person like Baqir Sadr and Musa Sadr were taken away from us. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين. My questions are over. Any new questions?
Again, thank you very much. That was a very good Q&A session, Mujahid, I think. And this point you made about groups, let's hope that our small group here itself uses a lot of that advice to go forward. And we almost need to create a movement, I think, in terms of of taking things forward. And perhaps on a separate note, we might be an idea to talk about how we could possibly think of reforming our Azadari, you know, because that's a huge platform that amongst the Shia community, and maybe we'll have a separate discussion on that. But I think that's one institution which I think is ripe for change, especially in the West, if we want to retain the interest of our the youth and, you know, have a meaningful discussion of Karbala and Imam Hussein rather than the traditional one. I see one hand raised, which is slightly confusing me because I can see Raza Bhai on a video, but he's logged in with his name and with a raised hand. So Raza Bhai, please clear the confusion. We can't hear you. You're still muted.
Yes. Assalamu alaikum, Maulana. Now, my question is, on the Day of Judgment, would that be a physical reality or is it just a rule? And also, is Jannat and Jahannam a physical reality or is it just a spiritual concept?
It is very clear with us. Yeah. You please.
And then our reward and punishment is again a physical reality or is it spiritual?
Among the Muslims, there is no doubt it's going to be physical. There is no doubt about the fact that it's going to be physical. There is nothing wrong in the physical at all if it is a process through which something good can happen. The very fact that we have a physical being, we have a mind capable of retaining objects as well as ideas, and a soul capable of using it. The body uses all the five senses, and the mind retains all the information it gathers from this process. And then the information is used by the soul to get to and convert it to different levels of knowledge. If that process needs to be continued or not, should the physical part, the same way that the mind was working here, and it worked in a pure manner, and where it sinned, it did tawbah. The body was used in a wonderful manner, where it sinned, it did tawbah. Now that when it has been raised, and given that purity of the soul, now the soul which is being given a body is not the original body given to the soul, which was pure and came. This is a tested and tried soul, which now is capable of getting a reward. So why not give it the mind? Why not give it the body which it has used and proved itself of capable of handling forces which can take it away from God, but use it to get towards God? Right? By asking the why question and getting more and more closer. So when it reaches the heaven, the question of why becomes the secondary objective, because it knew that. Now the question of how starts coming in. You didn't go after the how, where you could have gone, like others went after the how and not after the why. You went there after the why, and when you knew that it was a purpose with which I created you and that you are being tested, you lived the whole life under that state of test. You did that, right? Now is your turn to get the how of it. Now is your turn to get the how of it. That is, you will be shown all the malakutu samawate walars. This is there in the Quran. We showed Ibrahim the malakutu samawate walars, the forces, in a general manner, because in detail was not required. In a general manner, he had reached that point. The Miraj of the Prophet. Again, the verses are there. What you will get there as a physical body is the ability to know the how of things, how things were created, how the universe was created, how the whole processes worked in greater detail, which was not possible to you. You were just a spectator when God created the world. You were a spectator. I told this in the earlier lectures. As a spectator, you saw this created, you were given a soul with the body, then you started working and came to us. Now if you are in that pure state where things can be just managed with you, God can give up, your smaller sins can be pardoned, and you don't carry the bigger sins. And if there are some bigger sins which you have not done tawbah for, that would come be cleared from shafaat. This is very clear. Shafaat is for gunahane kabira, for the major sins, which have not been covered through tawbah in this world by a mu'min who has committed his life towards God. But he had his slippages, which he should have done in this world tawbah for, but he didn't because he forgot them or some other reason. That would be covered up through shafaat. And that's very clear. And it's a detailed kind of a thing which the Quran deals with. There's no doubt about it. So now you are cleared through all the processes. You followed the Prophet and the Imams. You did your best. And they would come and say, yes, he has tried to follow the path which we showed him in this world. oh God, there he slipped and fell and didn't remember it, was oblivious or was ignorant of it. So please forgive him his sin. So that could happen. And once you get to that level, your body becomes a blessing to you. Your mind becomes a blessing to you. No opposite current working against you. And there you will be enjoying the mind and the body in the realest sense. And that's what Jannat is all about. That is what Jannat is all about. No contradiction, no going away, no finishing off. Anything which you are doing, if you are in the happiest state in this world, you get a thought that, oh, I'm not going to live for maybe another 100 years or 50 years or for mis people like 10 years. Your happy moments will convert themselves into sadness. Oh, I'm going. Or by the way, you slowly start to weaken. You know that you are turning 60. Those of us who are above 60, I'm turning 70. They know the body has weakened. They will stand up immediately without a second thought, but now they have to give at least a fraction of a second thought to stand up. That happens, that's natural. So where is there anything good for the body also in this world? Everything has to perish. So anything which has to perish doesn't give you the greatest of joys. So what is the greatest joy? The greatest joy is you are physically immortal. Humphiya Khaladun means that. And you are able to take the taste of fruits, of other things of the kind which have been mentioned in the Quran. I'll go into detail of that later on. But for us, what has been mentioned in the Quran is the Rizwan of God, the pleasure of God, which is important. Nothing of the physical pleasure would even touch that level, because that's what God says in the final thing. Apart from the material pleasures which you will be having, again, a very, very totally blessed soul would hardly get great satisfaction of things which it feels it is being denied of in this world. The only reason it has been mentioned there is to give you that God is capable of giving all that you consider haram here. Therefore, we have sharaban tahura, drink which is pure. Then you have pure maids there, because you have been away from all this here. So that is a compensation mode. But that doesn't mean that the soul at that level would be wanting that compensation. This is for the soul which at this point of time requires to get the right path. So there it is told, you will get compensation. The kind of things which it considers from the bodily point of view here in this world doesn't make a lot of sense there. But surely there will be a body according to what the Quran and the riwayat say. Therefore, if there is a body for the good, there is a body for the bad as well, so that immortality of the human being is there, and the greatness with which it has been created requires a perpetual heaven or maybe a perpetual hell. And there are qualifying things where God says, or till he wants or wishes. So hopefully those in hell, maybe after a time, would be annihilated, we don't know. Maybe. His mercy would just not give them this, but the greatest pain that they would be having is not that pain which they are being burnt. The greatest pain would be having lost the opportunity of becoming godly and coming close to God, and not using the time of the exam to come closer to God and using it as a pleasure trip to the world and destroying the goodness of the soul. So the destruction of the goodness of the soul, which the Quran mentions in so many verses, khat khaba man dasa, person who has dirtied it, soiled it, right, will be somebody who will feel the displeasure of it, the pain of it. So the question is, maybe those in hell would be annihilated in the real sense. That could be the greatest azab that can happen. Your being being taken away from you as a result of it not becoming capable of entering heaven. Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Just want to talk about what age my body will be when I'm looking
at the age of the body?
Yeah.
Body will be reconstructed.
What age?
No, no, no. the body of the Qiyamah is not the body of this world. The body of this world has a specific purpose to perform, right? And there is also a question of having children here, right? Reproduction. And so all these factors will not be considered there when you and I are brought up. There is a possibility, because in this world, God says, we created you of a single nafs and created you a male and a female. We don't know in the Quran, if this be the case, this is for having a family. But when you are raised in the Qiyamah, right, whether the gender part of it would be that important? Will the gender part of it will be that important? Will women require uteruses, which is necessary for giving birth or not? These are questions which need to be pondered, because anything unnecessary should not be there. A perfect creation would mean that. So from the point of view of the Quran, does the gender matter at all is also a big question which we would have to answer. It's not very clear. But again, if you take this logic which I have taken now, so you will have the best of body, capable of getting the best of what God gives you and of the knowledge which God is going to impart to you, right? And that could continue for ages and ages, khalidun that road, because the intricacy of what God has created is beyond description. It's beyond description. And if you can know all that, what will be the state of the soul? And if specifically through a process of its own effort. So that is the question. The age would be the best age, as the body for this world is the best body. Similarly, the body for the Qiyamah would be the best body. And will that include the additional things of gender difference? This is a question which we need to ponder about. It has not been clearly understood. Philosophically, you would say it's not required. But do we have a religious mention of this? I have not been able to see anything. Philosophically, I am telling you this. But if you want it from a religious source, I don't have any present hadith to prove my point. I'm just speaking of a possibility. I also don't believe in it, but I'm speaking of a possibility.
What happens in Barzakh, Maulana? Barzakh.
Yeah. Barzakh is the state in which the soul leaves the body. For example, if a child is playing with a toy, you pull it away from it. A child is playing with a toy, totally involved with it. And you just pull away the toy. And just see the child screaming. Right? The world, for a person who believes the world is everything that it has, just try to take it away. It's the toy for the person. This world is a toy for that person. So its soul is totally engrossed and involved with this toy, which is the world for it. And its belongings, the things which it owns, the kind of glory in which it is held by other people, maybe he's a king, he's a prime minister or a president or anybody. And then suddenly or a film star or a rock star or a football player or a cricket player, whatever it be. And the world is great for it, him. And it considers this world to be everything for it. And suddenly that thing is taken away from it. The soul is left with nothing which it enjoyed in this world. Nothing. Just understand what is the condition of that soul when it is taken away from the body. The body is destroyed. That state of the soul will remain in the barzakh. Take the other person's soul. He was godly. He believed in the akhirat. Acted accordingly. Actually, akhirat is a mirror image of iman bil ghaib. Is the mirror image of iman bil ghaib. It's a mirror image. In the form of, as I told you, Quran is a mojiza after a mojiza after a mojiza. It gets the first point it puts out about faith in God is yuminuna bil ghaib. Why is that it does that? It's difficult. Look at the society, the Arab society, having faith in the unseen being put forward as the first principle for your journey towards God. Because if you don't move towards God from that point, you will go move towards rejecting God. So this is the kind of situation we are now in. We need to understand. We need to appreciate. that all what is being done here and in what state it's being done here will have an immediate impact after our death. Immediate impact. So the soul which is calm, composed, will enter Barzakh in a calm and composed manner. It's happy to lose its body. As Maula says in one of his khutbah, that for the muttaqeen, had God not fixed their age, their souls would leave their bodies with the fear that something wrong might happen and they might sin. And for the love of sawab, which they feel, which they are going to get. So with that state of mind, they would, their souls wouldn't like to remain with the body. Fear of, maybe we'll be sinning in the future, and the love and attachment to the sawab which God will be giving them. So they would be able to perceive it. So when they would be able to perceive it, they would want to die. But he says, therefore he says another khutbah, that the son of Abi Talib loves death more than a child the breasts of his mother. Because that's the only source for the child. He says, I love that more. Death. Because I know he who nourishes me is my God. And this nourishment is not physical in nature. Because my soul doesn't require a physical nourishment. So if I had to die, I would be too happy to die, to be with him without the pull of the world, of the universe, of the world, of the earth, of what we are made of, the clay we are made of. So these are the kind of states which we are speaking of. Two different individuals, bodies live the world. This nafs in a very, very degenerated state, the other nafs in a very evolved state. So the period before the qiyamah is going to be, and one more thing, the difference between qiyamah and barzakh is, apart from this basic difference, where the details of things will not be put forward, the qiyamah has a proper detailed kind of a court scene scenario where every action of the person would be evaluated and he would have reason to know why he is going to heaven or why he is going to hell. Secondly, is the social judging of people. The Quran speaks of two books on the day of Qiyamah. The individual account and the social account. And the ummahs coming together with their book. If we do something good also and don't work with the ummah to bring it to a higher level, we are gone. We are gone. Our community book of actions would be very, very bad, and that part would be a failure for us as individuals. So we can't be pious and unconcerned of the society we are living in, thinking that it doesn't bother me, only one book will be there. No. There will be a book for the individual and the book for the community. And as the Quran says, Tilka ummatun qad khalat laha ma kasabat wa lakum ma kasabtum wa ma tus'aluna amma kanu yamalun. They were a community, they were a people who came and went away. Now your number is there, you are here. You will not be questioned about what they did. And obviously they will not be questioned about what you did. So we all have a responsibility individually as well as socially to do the best we can. And the test we have is the test of the soul. The soul is always in a state where it is feeling its movement towards God and therefore improving, and improving those around it as well. And taking the help of other souls to improve. So it's like coming together, and this is the verse, وَتَوَاسَوْ بِالْحَقِّ وَتَوَاسَوْ بِالْصَبْرِ. Everybody, وَالْأَسْرِ إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَفِي خُسْرِ. All of mankind is in a loss, except those آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ, have faith and do good deeds, وَتَوَاسَوْ بِالْحَقِّ and وَتَوَاسَوْ بِالْصَبْرِ. Recommend each other sabr and truth. We were speaking of azadari also. Azadari has gone bad basically because the quotient of truth has been reduced. In a science class, if I am speaking without proof, the next day I will be handed a dismissal, suspension order. They will say you have spoken two, three things here for which you have no proof. Give your own proof or give a proof from standard authorities. What you have done is you have not given a proof from your side. You have not given proofs from any authorized source. So you are speaking something outside of the domain of science because you are speaking outside the domain of proof. So please go home. Please go home. And if you go home and your wife is also working and you are doing the cooking, and again you don't keep that balance of cooking in a proper manner, putting one day more salt, the other day something else, maybe you would be given marching orders from home as well. But what happens? In religion, everything can happen. You can say 2 plus 2 is 4, you can say 2 plus 2 is 10, then you can say 2 plus 2 is minus 5, then you can say anything you want. And everybody has to listen to it because it's like the king's new clothes. Nobody can say anything about it. Everybody has to accept it. What kind of religion will work like this? What kind of religion will work like this? If somebody wants to put some sand in the petrol and ask us to fill it in the car, we say no, we are happy you fill it yourself. But when somebody does the same thing for our religion, we lap it up. We don't want sand in our petrol and diesel. But we can take any damn thing in our religion. So religion is falling basically because it is following lesser standards than science. Religion is supposed to have standards higher than science so that it can influence science. If you bring religion to the level of being lesser than science in the matter of proofs, it will become hearsay. And it has become hearsay. Proofless. Why God says, Hatu burhanakum in kuntum sadiqin, get your proofs if you are true. But we say no, proof is required. Everything that the fools accept is religion, and everything which the intelligent accept is irreligion. That is our definition of religion these days. It is the following of, the fools in the name of the most wise God, God's book, God's prophets, and the God's imams. To put it in a very different, what is happening is, they profit from taking people away from God in the name of God. I just written this today evening, I just got in, I'm just adding here. They profit from taking people away from God in the name of God. Is it not happening this way? It is. And the problem is, now you can't use God to go back because God has been taken prisoner. The prophet has been taken prisoner. The book has been taken prisoner. The Ahlul Bayt have been taken prisoner. Yazid took it for a few months. But we have taken them prisoners for till eternity. God save us all. Thank you.
I mean, the other issue, just to conclude, Mujahid, is particularly in the West, is making Azadari or Majalis relevant to the issues that are faced by the people in these countries. You know, obviously in Karbala and in Imam Hussein's sacrifice, there are supreme examples of how they saw God and how they their ethics and their and those qualities. But you know, for example, a test here would be whether you can take your neighbor to a majlis. You know, can you take your neighbor to the majlis here? And I suppose that could apply in Hyderabad as well. Can you take a Hindu to a majlis? Would it make any sense to him? Probably not.
See, if a Hindu cannot attend our majlis, that means we are speaking something apart from what the Prophet was speaking. The Prophet came to the Hindus.
Exactly.
Idol worshippers.
Yes. Exactly.
And whatever he told them was reason and sensible for them. And they accepted it. Those who didn't were those who were exploiting them. And therefore there was the fight. Leave it to the people. Had you taken a vote on the day the Prophet did Hijra, you would find an overwhelming majority of the Meccans giving their vote to the Prophet. But the question was, they were controlled by a small group of people and they didn't have freedom. A lot of them were slaves. They didn't even have food to eat unless the master gave them food. So the Prophet had to take refuge in Medina. Keeping that in mind, if we are incapable of telling things to my Hindu neighbor or your Christian or Jewish neighbor, that means we have gone away from the faith. Jadilhum billatiya ahsana sayya, says the Quran. Dispute with them
in the best manner,
in a process, in a methodology which is best acceptable to them. Proof and truth are things which human souls lap up. There's no denying that. You and I also will do it. If I lie to you and you come to find it about it, you will be angry. And I speak the truth to you, which were not known to you then, but later you came to know about it, you will be thankful to me. You told me something which I didn't know and it came out to be truth, the truth. And you like, at least do some dua for me. The opposite. But the funny part is this. Those who are taking the people away from the path of the Ahle Bayt, the path of the Prophet, the path of the Quran, and the path of God, Siratul Mustaqim, are basically being accepted not because there is love between the person who is accepting that person, but because that person wanted to hear that about religion. So it's the people who are corrupting the clergy, and when the clergy understand that this is the only way, a lot of them succumb to the pressure and start saying the same thing which the public wants to hear. So it's kind of a jugalbandi which we say. It's a jugalbandi in which each is playing its own role. The population wants freedom from religious edicts. And the Maulana feels that if he can do that, he will get freedom from a lot of his wants of this world. He'll have a house for himself. He'll have a car. He'll have other things and other things as well. So keeping all that in mind, he goes for it. So it's a journey towards hell. It's a journey towards hell. Anything which is not based on truth is a journey towards hell. Simple as that. This is to be very clearly told. Don't have religion, it's better than to have a religion which is dirty. Because you will use it thinking that it's the greatest thing that is happening. And you get to that point where God says, O Prophet, should I show you the one who is at the greatest loss when it comes to actions? I'm translating the verse of the Quran. رَدُلُّكُمْ إِلَىٰ أَخْتَرِينَ عَمَلَىٰ الَّذِينَ ظَلَّ صَعِيُهُمْ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَهُمْ يَحْسَبُونَ أَنَّهُمْ يُحْسِنُونَ صُنَىٰ. O Prophet, should I point you out to that person who, or those people who are from the point of view of actions, afal, the worst, they are those whose efforts in this world have gone waste while they considered they were doing the greatest good. الَّذِينَ who? What they did was thinking that it was the greatest thing. Zalla sa'yuhum fil hayati dunya. Their efforts in this world got waste. Wahum yahsabuna annahum yusununa sunna. While they were imagining, they were doing something great. Is it not telling something about us and our communities today? It is.
Yeah. Sad.
Leaving the part of truth. Leaving the part of truth. Imams died for it. You don't want to live for it. You don't want to live for it. They died for it. And we don't want to live for it. We are dying as a result of it, but still we don't want to live for it. A question has come from my listeners here. How do we break through first hormonal, second social pressures, second being a dominant factor around us, and make the soul blossom along with the society, the roots? The question is basically very, very simple. If you recognize that the soul has been given the body, the hormonal pressures become a very normal kind of thing. The problem is, the hormones which God has given us are controllable. It is in the controllable limit. Had He given hormones 10 times of what we are having now, we would not be normal individuals at all. God has given us very, very normal kind of a thing. It is we who work it up through the intervention of Saturn. So if we feel that something is happening which is not normal, there is some kind of pushing, understand it to be Shaitan who is pushing this weakness of yours and enhancing it through false imagery which it is able to create in your mind. So one thing is very obvious. The hormones are a very normal thing. Just like the different hormones in our body which we have, which control our other parts of the body as well, the endocrine system completely. Part of it is related to the things which can lead us to sin. So we need to understand that. So it's part like, it's like the thyroid, it's like the pancreas. So the other things are also similar. We need to understand their role. Once the role is understood, we will not be moved by the hormones. How will the role be understood is a big question. Here it is that the fact that my soul is not for my body is for my soul, needs to be properly digested. You should be able to say who you are means I am my soul. And what is your body? My body is my instrument. Never it is like, I had given this example earlier, like a batsman, he scores all his runs with the bat. But he knows it's an instrument. It has to follow the rules of the body. The bat has to move the way the arm is making it to move. The way the footwork is going, in tandem it has to move. And all the scoring will be done with the bat. But it is not he which is the bat. It's an instrument. So he uses it in the best possible manner. Consider your soul to be the body of the batsman and your body to be the bat in the hand of the soul, which is the body. Now can you make the bat a thing in itself? But we are doing it day in and day out. Neglect of the soul. Neglect of the soul. Your happiest moments, note this down. I'm telling to the young people sitting here. Are not the pleasures of your body. They are not. God has been kind enough that those pleasures are limited in time. If you eat the best of food, there is a point up to which you will eat. After that, if you keep continuing, you will have problems. You will either vomit, or you will have a stomachache, or you will have loose motions. You have eaten something which is the of the best taste to you, but it will not continue. 15 minutes, 20 minutes you have eaten, after that will only add to your pain. Anything else also you can put it in the same category. But when it comes to the soul's state of feeling happy, just try to follow this up. It doesn't get exhausted. At times, people who are there, hours of prayer, they enjoy and they get benefited from it. And that is their highest level of pleasure. That is their highest level of pleasure. So even in this world, the pleasure of the soul, you take the love and affection between a wife and a husband. Physical is the small part. The love and affection created by God according to the words of the Quran, وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَهُمَا مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً, is the bigger part. If you take it for this opposite of it, the family life will collapse. It will totally collapse after a point of time. It won't work. That is the reason why the divorces are happening. Simple as that. Your greatest pleasures are the love you can give to each other as brothers, as husband and wife. That should be of solace to you. And you don't lose anything in it. It doesn't cost you. It's not in the form of gifts. It's the kind of pleasure which a brother comes to have when he meets a brother, because he's getting something of that kind from him, or the other way, the family as well. It is the love that the wife gives. It's the love that the husband gives. All things of the soul. Get that to work. and then you will see what change it will come and bring in you and those around you and the children you are bringing up. Inshallah. Thank you so much.
Well, Shukriya, thank you very much, Mujahid. I think it was a very, aapke liye kafi lamba session ho gaya, 2 hours, probably more than 2 hours. But alhamdulillah, I hope that the audience had a lot of food for thought, a lot of their questions got answered, alhamdulillah. Inshallah, we pray that God strengthens you and continues to bless you with